Hey, welcome to Flipping the Field, the college football podcast about all of college football. I'm your host, Patrick Mayhorn. I am joined, as always, by co-host Ryan Donnelly. Ryan, what's up, man? How's it going?
Oh, we're living large, Pat. We are living large. Spring ball started around most of the country. Spring football is here. March Madness is right around the corner. It's basically already football season.
Don't say
that's
that.
Where my mind's at.
Dude, I'm going to derail us here at the very beginning of the show and talk about a thing that I saw yesterday that made me mad, which is like most of what we do on this show. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, the Andy Staples post.
I hate that motherfucker.
I saw it and like...
Did he just go back to talking about like, oh, no, I know y'all ain't doing barbecue like that down there. Let's just let him do that all the time. I don't need anything else from him.
Was he saying y'all? Did he have a y'all pass? Does Andy Staples have... I feel like that's a New York style.
He went
name.
To Florida. I think he's
okay.
A y'all guy.
Yeah, I guess he did go to Florida. Andy Staples is very much a New York style name. That's a guy who works in an office. He works for Staples.
He's the last guy yeah. who works for Staples.
Weirdly enough, he actually works for Office Max. That was a big corporate espionage sort of play by Staples. Yeah. As they placed him at Office
yeah.
Max.
Yeah, he was involved in the private equity sell off of Circuit City.
Yeah,
and he changed his name to kind of throw things off the scent.
Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. It used to just be Andy Computer, and everybody's like, wow, that's one hell of a name, Andy. It's good for this industry. You're a rising yeah. star in this world.
We don't know this, but he's actually Kim.com's cousin.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That one is probably. I don't know if you know who Kim.com is.
No, I don't. I don't know who that is.
It's okay. He's a guy. I mean, honestly, I'm a little too young to really know him, but he was a big hacker in the 90s. And then, he founded Mega Upload. If you ever use that for pirating things.
I have not used Mega Upload. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay. But it's kind of well known.
Anyway, I saw the Andy Staples post and I could feel just the level of how in the off season I am, because I saw it and like, I got a little bit upset, but mostly I just felt nothing. Mostly I just saw that and I was like, yeah, fine, whatever. The sport is declining so rapidly that I can't even get mad about Andy Staples' fucking bait post. I can't bring myself to do it. Like, yeah, it's probably going to be that. Okay, good one, Andy. I'll see you next week when you do another one of these, basically. I've been fucking crushed by the brutal death march of this sport towards where it is heading. I feel nothing about it anymore. I'm not interested in it. I've got nothing cooking for college football. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of this fucking sport. I'm ready for
it
to die.
But this is when they wear us down, dude. Like, this is when they're announcing, like, I don't know, just February and March, they just want to break our spirits and be like, yeah. Oh, 2-minute warning. Oh, have you heard about Arch Manning in the video game?
Mm-hmm.
What about a 14-team playoff? Oh, what if Andy Staples ruined the entire sport? Like,
yeah.
This is when they sneak in all these insidious ideas and just kind of make them part of the background. And then everyone else who's like, you know, normal, didn't spend all year thinking about this, like wakes up to the sport in August and is like, oh, what the fuck's going on? Why is there a 2-minute warning? Why is this stuff happening? What do you mean? How many teams are going to the playoff? Like, they just do all this insidious shit now.
Yeah. It's awesome that they're also doing that for college basketball, where like while they're sort of funneling all of this shit into our collective mouths for college football, they're also like, well, let's make it a 96 team tournament. Who cares? Whatever. Yeah. It doesn't even matter. Let's just everybody.
It's a real yeah. human centipede style move by NCAA.
It's awesome. It's really good, and it's especially good if you are hosting a college football podcast. It really makes you want to talk about the sport. That is for sure. Ryan, what are we doing here today?
Yeah, we're trying to do something fun. You guys know we love a hypothetical. So for us, the premise of today's podcast is basically figuring out, you know, what it would look like if you were basically an athletic director, generic blue blood X.
Okay.
And you were tasked with winning a national championship in the next 5 years. Right. So I wrote up some cute little premise behind this that I just share with Patrick for our like brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to read it verbatim to you guys. It's not a polished copy. Look, I don't need any punch ups on this.
Yeah.
You guys will get the idea behind it. Here's my little intro. The four-team college football playoff lasted for 10 seasons, with 40 individual appearances being made in the top four. The coaches who were responsible for 19 of those appearances and coaches responsible for 16 of the last 21 national championships are no longer running FBS programs. This has left a huge power vacuum at or near the top of college football. For today's podcast, we're playing the role of athletic director at Generic Blue Blood X, tasked with hiring the coaches we're most confident will win us a national title in the next 5 years. We can assume that whoever we're hiring is not a poor cultural or geographic fit and would work well at whichever school employs us. Our only job is finding the coach most capable of building a championship roster and getting it done on the field. They must be a sitting head coach, and we can assume we'd be able to hire them wherever they're currently at. I mean, you're not blocked from hiring. No shock here is number one on both of our lists, but Kirby Smart from Georgia. You know, you can hire anyone from anywhere. I guess Kevin, I called you Kevin, Jesus Christ, I'm in High Street Freaks mode. Patrick, I was kind of thinking about this, like my methodology behind it. We kind of talked about it a little bit before the record. What was your approach to this and kind of what were your considerations when you were making your list?
Yeah, first of all, I will say this is within our allotted assignment of times that we can hypothetically be athletic directors within an off season. We're given two of these shows, and this is one of them. So everybody, get off my nuts. I know we do these. We have two allowed that we can do per off season. This is one of them. We're cashing it in. I kind of going through this list. There were some guys who were just non-starters for me because I have essentially seen them in this role, right? I have seen them as a head coach at a blue blood and not a generic blue blood, but they can all be treated somewhat similarly with the resources that they have and everything. And so there were some guys who I just wasn't all that interested in because I've seen them do this and they couldn't cut it. They couldn't do it. They couldn't get over that hump. And I think that, and this is something else that we talked about before we actually started recording, that calculus might have to change without Nick Saban. That calculus might have to change without a truly dominant coach atop the sport, save maybe for Kirby Smart. And I think you all will probably be able to guess who number one is on both of our boards. But I have seen enough of some of these guys where I didn't see a reason to do that. I don't know that I believe in their ability to accomplish this, to win a championship within 5 years. And so I kind of went for more of a speculative approach. I took a little bit more risk on who I wanted on my list with potential rather than just going for guys who I know can coach at a blue blood. Because ultimately I won't be fired if my number eight guy doesn't win a championship at my fake school within 5 years. And so I think sure. I can take
it's a probably more fun to talk about for a podcast.
Yeah, it's probably more fun to talk about for a podcast. And so can Dabo Swinney in theory win a national championship? Yeah, he has done that. I don't know that he still can. I don't have a whole lot of faith in his ability to do that in the current college football landscape. And so I was a little bit more willing to take guys who have not been there, have not even been in a job of this caliber, but just who I think are better coaches right now and who I think could develop into eventual national championship winning coaches in the current landscape, which is, you know, it has nothing to do with what Dabo did in 2018 or whatever. Who do I think could win it in 2024 through 2028? Or 29 or whatever it is. It was a little bit of that. It was a little bit more of like, basically I think what I'd be looking for if I was actually trying to hire a coach for such a job, which is I wouldn't really just want somebody who has been there but hasn't been able to do it or somebody on the decline because their name is associated with championships. I would want somebody who I think could improve into it and could actually have the potential to do it rather than someone who I think I kind of know what the ceiling is at this point. And again, that calculus maybe changes without Saban, but based on what I have seen, there's some guys on this list who I was able to kind of block off right away because I just don't have confidence in their ability to win a game of that magnitude. I just don't think they could actually physically win a national championship. I don't think they have it in them.
Yeah, I hear that and I get that. And I think I had similar, I thought about it a lot for some guys and a little bit less for others, right? Like if your primary problem as Coach X we're talking about here, and there's probably a few that popped to mind for everybody. I don't think those are any big secret. was not being able to get past certain coaches that are now gone from the sport, at least temporarily. You know, I think that that's the floodgates are open to me, right? Because I don't think that Kirby Smart, as great as he is, can win every national title. I think even if you were thinking that he could go on a Saban-like run and win 7 of 13, I very much doubt that will happen. So something like, you know, 2/3 of the national titles over the next course of this playoff era are going to be open to be won. And some guys that we've called losers are probably going to win some of them, right? Like, if you just follow the numbers on it, I don't think they're all going to be won by unknowns or guys currently not at those jobs. Like, I don't know, all of last season, right? One of our biggest misses was on, you know, 8-4 Sark, right? Yeah. On like saying Sark couldn't really get the team over the hump because he hadn't done it in the first, I don't know, what is it, like 8 years of his career before last season. And to be fair, he did still shit his pants in the semifinal. Mm-hmm. His team played bad and didn't look prepared. But you also can consider, like, is that like always going to be the case, right? Like, Sark definitely couldn't get it done, but is he learning as a coach? Should he improve with what he was doing at USC and Washington, right? What he's doing at Texas?
Yeah,
I'd say certainly. Like, even as much of like a loser as I think Ryan Day is, I think he's probably shown some growth over the course of this past offseason. I think there are some things he realized that he was fucking up. Not enough of them for my liking, but some things he realized he was fucking up that he's probably changing on. Even Lincoln Riley finally got rid of Alex Grinch after what felt like a decade. And I'm not saying he's going to make my list or that he's a guy who I think will figure it out. Mm-hmm. But there's always a level of promise in the coaches who haven't been tested like that. And inevitably, some of them will become hits. But there are also a lot of guys in those shoes who got bigger jobs that we thought would, you know, crush it that didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know if we thought like Billy Napier would crush it, right? I think we all liked him a lot in Louisiana.
I felt pretty good about Billy Napier, and he has not done. I mean, Tom Herman is another. I mean, it wasn't his fault. He was he was treated unfair. He was treated very unfairly.
Well,
like,
Texas, I think,
but he didn't win a national championship or anything like that, and he was obviously a rising star.
Yeah.
Justin
Even
Fuente.
Even Luke Fickell seems to be sliding backwards.
Yeah,
right?
Luke Fickell is somebody who, like, last year, if we had done this, easily would have made my top 10. This year, I'll tell you, he's not there. I don't have him there right now. And that's recency bias, but also, it was a bad season. It was a really bad season. And
yeah.
That's
I mean, Dave Aranda would have made our top like 5 a couple years ago.
Yeah. Boy, that would be kind of a grim story to reflect on like 2 or 3 years ago who we would have on this list. It would be a different story, I think. On that point, essentially, to quote Christine Pelosi, it is quite likely that some of our faves are implicated. There are going to be some guys who we don't really like all that much who will have to be here because somebody has to be here. Somebody's going to have to win these championships. I do think looking at this list of, I would say mostly pinheaded morons. It's a lot of pinheaded morons on here. I do think that Kirby Smart, if anybody is ever going to have another Nick Saban style run, boy, he's got a clear field for it. Not a lot of competition out there.
Sure.
If he wants to do that, I think you could maybe get away with it if he was going to do that. But it is still, I mean, there's a reason it's only happened the once. There's a reason that Nick Saban's the only guy who has done that. It's not like he was going up against the, you know, the most talented field of coaches of all time. Like, there's always going to be kind of a batch of losers who are in big programs who can't quite get it done. And even then, throughout the history of the sport, people have not done what Nick Saban did. And so you can't really assume that he's going to. But there are some guys that you just, you know, there's got to be 10. You have to pick 10 of them. And eventually you're going to have to settle on some guys who we have talked about on this show as not being capable. Maybe they are now because of the ways that the sport has changed. Do you want to start here? So we have two different lists. We've not shared our lists with each other ahead of time. We're going to kind of go through and talk through these as we go. Do you want to start from 1 and then work our way back, or do you want to start at 10?
Yeah, I mean, look, let's start at 1. We can both get Kirby Smart out of the way because there's no need to really talk about him. It's the obvious choice.
Yeah.
He won back-to-back national titles. I get the sense that if they hadn't freaked it against Bama, they probably would have won last year too.
Yeah.
That's a hypothetical. I don't know. But clearly Georgia is very obvious at the top of the sport right now, and there's no other competition for this spot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, it's Kirby. Kirby is the one who I feel best about. Kirby, I could write down comfortably at number one. Everybody else, I feel less good about. Once you get past one, it becomes a much harder conversation, but there's no real, I mean, it's him. He has the best, currently sitting, he has the best program in America, and he has proven his ability to build a program into a national title contender, not once, but twice, a national title winner, not once, but twice. I think he's the best recruiter in the country. He hires extremely good coaches. It's Kirby with a bullet. There's really no, I don't think there's any room for, I don't even know who else you could have realistically at number one. I think Kirby is the
obvious. Yeah, there's nobody. If you pick anyone else, you're crazy. Yeah.
So,
okay. So who's your number two?
Number two is where it got a little bit difficult. Once you get the easy one off the board, I went with Mike Norvell. I think that what he has done in a fairly short time at Florida State has told me that he can build a team capable of competing at this level. I think that if they were healthy and they had the chance to play in the playoff, they very well could have been in the national championship game. I don't know if they would have won it, but that team was really good when they were healthy, when they were rolling, they were really good. And he's not been there that long. And, you know, I would like to see, we've talked about this a million times on the show, but I would like to see more depth within the roster. I think it will get there. I would like to see him fill it out a little bit more with recruiting, but as a football coach, as an ability, you know, as a guy who can build up a program and has systems capable of winning a national championship offensively and defensively, I think Mike Norvell is the one I feel best about. Basically it comes down to, I think he's the second best coach on the board here. I would go with Norvell.
Yeah, Mike Norvell also made my list. He's just a little bit further down. I'll get into him a mind soon. You know, I'll probably talk about him more here. I like Norvell a lot, right? He's very high on my list too. He obviously made the Orange Bowl last season after losing Jordan Travis to injury. He also made a Cotton Bowl at Memphis. He's been a head coach for 8 seasons and has 4 ranked finishes, despite spending half that time, again, at Memphis in the AAC. He has back-to-back top 10 finishes, back-to-back 10-win seasons. He has 4 10-win seasons in 8 years as a coach. He's a really good ball coach, and I think he's also building Florida State's roster in a very, like, he's doing what he can to recover from the mistakes that came before him, right? I would like to see him probably recruit a little bit better.
Yeah.
I mean, they signed, what is it, this year, the class was 12th in the composite on 247. I think they signed the 19th class the year before that. They have not, I'm going to double check this, I don't think they've signed a top 10 class under him, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah, and I'll interject, at least when I'm thinking about recruiting ability for a coach, I'm talking about high school recruiting. Portal recruiting, he's obviously very good at, but high school recruiting is where you fill out the depth of your roster, and that has been a little bit lacking.
For sure. And that's like the only knock on him is that high school recruiting. The rest of it, like for what he's walked into at Florida State, he's been excellent.
Yeah.
I also thought he did a great job at Memphis. That took it to a better height than Fuente ever did when he was at Memphis.
Yeah.
I am really impressed by what he's built back-to-back times now. I like Norvell a lot. He's very high on my list too. I have him just a bit lower. Number two on my list was Kalen DeBoer.
Okay.
Which it could be a slight overreaction, I will acknowledge. He's only been an FBS head coach for 4 seasons. He started out in the COVID year at Fresno State, where he went 3-3, went 9-3 the next year, then back-to-back 10-win seasons and top 10 finishes at Washington. Obviously made the national title game this year and lost to Michigan, but beat Texas, beat Oregon twice, had a hell of a run this year at Washington. I mean, just like that roster peaking the way it did was super, super impressive. They obviously didn't have the lines to get it done against Michigan, but I thought he was really impressive there. He also was a head coach for 5 years at Sioux Falls in the NAIA. This may seem silly, but to kind of factor in a little bit for me, I want someone who I know can win a big game. I think he showed that this year at Washington, despite falling short in the title game. But he won 3 national titles in 4 years at Sioux Falls. And the other year he lost in the championship game. He also made a semifinal in his first year as a head coach. I mean, he was 67-3 at Sioux Falls, which, again, is NAIA, but like there's something to that, right? When you see guys win at a high level at lower levels, quite a few of them translate, you know, like championship wins. Lance Leipold's done it. Brian Kelly won a couple national titles at Grand Valley State. Enough of these guys translate to higher levels with what they do that, based on DeBoer's success, we've already seen at the FBS level. I'm willing to bet on him.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think we've talked about this before with hiring guys from lower levels, not necessarily for nobody on my board here is a FCS or D2 or D3 or NAIA coach, but bringing those guys up, it is the skills translate because yes, the talent level is lower there. Obviously, the NAIA is not, the FBS is not competing for a national championship at this level, but also you still have an NAIA roster. It is not like you have a, you know, you're not competing with a fucking team full of NFL players against the other NAIA teams. You still have to compete within that context that you are, you know, coaching in.
You don't fall out of the coconut tree.
Yeah, you didn't fall out of the coconut tree. You exist within the context that you're coaching in. If you can do it at that level, you can probably, it's not like the skills really change. The recruiting changes a little bit, and that would be, that's, I also have him on a you know, pretty high level on my board, not quite two, but the recruiting is the only thing I'm really worried about here that, like, I think even Norvell is a better recruiter than Kalen DeBoer. I've not quite seen it from him yet. But as an actual football coach, it's pretty hard to argue with his ability to win football games. He's very good at it. He has won as efficiently as just about anybody in America at this point.
104-12 overall, if you include the FBI, include the NAIA.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good start.
It's pretty good. Yeah. And I mean, 35-9 in the FBS, which is still very impressive for a young head coach. I mean, look, there are definitely knocks on DeBoer. I'm not like saying he's the next Nick Saban. I think Alabama is probably going to have a pretty rough year. I think some of the roster retention and commit retention and coach retention challenges at Alabama, like, have me kind of blinking a little bit for this year. I wonder if he might go 9-3 or 8-4 there. But if I'm being asked for the next 5 years, who I think is likeliest to win a national championship, DeBoer is very high up there for me.
Yeah.
And I like that he doesn't blink in big games. So he's high on my list. Who do you have at three?
Okay. So this is where I think we're going to start to differ. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you like this guy as well, but you know how I feel about this man. And my pick at number three is maybe kind of a crazy one, but I have faith in him in any job that I could put him in. That would be Lance Leipold.
Just say it.
Yeah. Lance Leipold. I could say a lot of the same stuff about him that you just said about DeBoer. I think obviously at the FBS level, he has taken much harder jobs, and so his record reflects that. But he has now successfully built winners of two programs that it seemed pretty much impossible to do that with. Buffalo at least had somewhat recent history of it, not that much. Kansas was, I mean, it's funny to talk about now, because we have now seen what they can do under Lance Leipold, and they've had successful seasons under him and seemingly are going to continue to have successful seasons. This was like 3 years ago, the worst job in the world. This was like the worst. This was the worst program in America. They were one win every single season. They kept hiring coaches, and those coaches kept being terrible. They kept firing guys after three straight years of 2-10 or 1-11 or winless. They were nothing. There was nothing there. And he has, in an unbelievably short amount of time, turned it into one of the stronger rosters and programs in the Big 12. And the Big 12 obviously has changed over this last 2 weeks, basically, where they have welcomed these teams in. But I don't have any reason to think that a worse Big 12 would be harder for Kansas. I think Kansas is probably going to be fine. And I think that Lance Leipold, if he could do it there, I think he could do it pretty much anywhere. You know, his recruiting, and this is going to be a theme for a lot of these guys, his recruiting is a little bit of a question mark because we just haven't seen him at a blue blood. But I don't have any reason to think he can't do it. I don't have any reason to think that he's not capable of doing that. I trust Lance Leipold. I think he's a really, really good football coach. And I think if I'm hiring for a job of this caliber and I want somebody who can go win championships, I have a lot of confidence that Lance Leipold could win championships.
Yeah. I mean, he won 6 national titles in 8 years at Wisconsin Whitewater. And one of the other 2 years, he lost the title game. you talk about a winner, like Jesus Christ. And then in the last 6 years at Buffalo and Kansas, again, which are Buffalo and Kansas, he went 10-4, 8-5, 6-1 in the COVID season with a ranked finish, 2-10 first year at Kansas, 6-7 the next year, 9-4 with a ranked finish at fucking Kansas.
Yeah.
Like what he has done, you know, in the last few years here is unbelievable. His recruiting is a real unknown. We don't know if he can recruit to the level to like play with these other teams. That's something you don't really know, and part of the guesswork of when you're talking about a lower level coach. Even though we've seen like Norvell and DeBoer not quite recruit at elite levels the way some of these other guys can, they have recruited well enough, obviously, to get to and play in very big games at those schools and have a head advantage. Buffalo and Kansas are so hard to extrapolate to jobs like that.
Yeah.
It's really hard to predict, but I mean, yeah, he's a hell of a coach. I have him on my list too. He's a little bit lower for that reason of my question. Like, can he build a roster? What does that look like at like a championship level? But he is on my list too, obviously.
Yeah.
My number three, God fucking help me here. I listed Ryan Day. It sucks. I didn't want to do it. Here's the thing. I am the first to criticize Ryan Day. Pretty much. Yeah. I might be the world's foremost Ryan Day hater.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's also coached for 5 seasons. He's made a championship game. He has 3 playoff appearances. He's made the NY6 the other 2 years. We didn't make the playoff. He has 2 conference titles, 2 division titles, and a 53-8 record as a head coach. By the way, anyone who counts the interim games, shut the fuck up. You're a loser.
Mm-hmm. Who cares?
53-8 as a head coach. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's averaging, 1.3 losses a year. He is a very, very good coach in some respects. I think he's a loser in a lot of other ways. It seems like he's learning his lesson in some of the staff building stuff. He has balanced out his staff. He's no longer doing that ridiculous special teams only coach thing. He has an offensive coordinator in Chip Kelly he's handing things off to. He got way more aggressive at the transfer portal this year, like inarguably, where he had been kind of cautious before. His recruiting's always been elite. He has great quarterback play. I still have some concerns about some of his staff positions and some of his, like, the way he treats the lines. And that is obviously, that's an important thing, right? Line play wins championships. Line of scrimmage is where you win championships at. I think he's been too slow to let go of Larry Johnson. I think his offensive line this past year was pretty mediocre because of a problem he should have seen coming that I was screaming about from the fucking hilltops that I saw coming with Greg Studrawa. And I think the same thing's going to happen as defensive line with Larry Johnson. I worry he's too slow to move sometimes, but he is beginning to learn. And years 1-5 of Ryan Day were deeply frustrating, but still produced, a playoff win over Clemson. He beat Michigan in 2019. He's lost a lot of big games, but he's won some of them. And has, had quite a few other top 10 wins. He is very frustrating for me for wanting to win championships so far, and I'm tired of waiting on him. However, if you gave Ryan Day 5 more years and a fresh head start, a blank slate from what he's learned in these first 5 years, I think he's about as capable of winning a national title as anyone not named Kirby Smart in the country.
Okay. You're going to have to walk this road alone. I do not have, I don't know who the comparisons would be for this. I'm sure that there are examples of this in college football. There's a long history in this sport. There's been a lot of coaches. I would describe Ryan Day and my feelings about him is I don't know if I'm coining the term. I would call him an Achilles heel coach. I think that no matter what he does, no matter how much he changes, no matter how good a roster looks, how much he learns and grows, I think he every single year will have one thing that holds him back. He will have one thing that he did not consider, that he was not quick enough on, that he is then reacting to that upcoming offseason, and then something else pops up. I have seen it now from him 5 seasons. He's done this all 5 years as the program has become more and more shaped in his image. This has just been, like you were saying, he's just a little bit slow to adapt. He's a little bit slow to change. I think he is, for all of the
the branding that he has done as like an aggressive, you know, coach, he really isn't that aggressive. He's really not that aggressive.
I think he's
too cautious. And I have a fear that he is never going to have the perfect storm season because he is so consistently incapable of getting out of his own way because of his own caution.
But haven't there been, I agree with you, but just for argument's sake here, haven't there been quite a few national titles where it was an imperfect team with a flaw that like seems like it should have easily been exploited, but they won the title anyway because no one else exploited it? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Hasn't that happened quite a few times already? I guess like just as the sport vacates, like all you need is a down year from Georgia, right? Like there's no one else in college football right now with Saban and Harbaugh gone that I could say like Ryan Day cannot beat in a game. So all you need is Kirby Smart to miss a title game one time and you're like the favorite.
Yeah. I guess my fear then with that,
I got your larger point though.
Yeah. My fear with that is that as we are considering the sport as it's currently shaped and as it's going to be shaped moving forward in these immediate years, with a team that has a fatal flaw, you can no longer just overcome that once to win a national championship. You have to win three games. You have to do it three times minimum, right? You have to do the if you're like the one seed, I think you still have to play three games to win the championship. And I just have a hard time thinking that three playoff teams, three top 12 teams in the country, if they get a shot at a team that has a weakness, which I just think that his always will have at least one thing that he neglected. Yeah. The one thing that he neglected currently is that his strength and conditioning coach is bad, and so his team is always going to be limited by that. And
also his D-line coach.
And also his defensive line coach. And so I just like, can he do it once? Yeah, I think he could. I think he could win. If it was a one-off championship game, I think he could do that. Can he do it three times? I don't know. I don't know if he could. I think if you give good teams that much of a runway, somebody will get him. Somebody will knock him off from that point. I just don't have a ton of faith in that.
Yeah, I think it's very likely. I think basically every other coach I considered, though, also has a fatal flaw. Quite a few of them are recruiting.
Yeah.
Can they actually recruit? Do they care about recruiting enough? Day's in-game stuff is very annoying, but I hear you. Like, I guess his pathway is just hoping he builds the 2019 LSU offense and like carries that to a title, which I don't know if he will or could, but that's like, if I'm making a bet on who has the highest odds to get this done, he's up there for a reason because of the recruiting baseline, because of the quarterback development, because of, you know, some of the increased awareness of like how to hire better staff and using his weight to throw that around. Transfer portal stuff, like just the way he builds a roster has improved so much. And I think that the coaching staff stuff, while still very frustrating, is getting better. I think the game management stuff, I'm praying, could be less of a problem now that he's not doing everything all at once with being the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator and the head coach. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, look, it very well could, he's a guy who could win a national title next year or could be fired next year. And neither outcome would surprise me that much.
That's such a good dynamic to be in. That's always that's the best situation to be in, is that you could win a national championship or you could be fired. Who knows? That's awesome. Number four, I have Kalen DeBoer. I'm not going to go into any further detail than what you did. I think you pretty well covered it. I have him at four. Who is your number four?
Mine's Mike Norvell, who we also covered.
Okay. There we go.
We just swapped number five. Who do you got?
For number five, I have Kyle Whittingham. You can kind of see where I'm going with this a lot. I am not really a recruiting guy. I understand its importance. I am not saying that it doesn't matter. Obviously, it does. You have to have a very talented roster to win a national championship. My theory is basically that if you hire a competent level recruiter, you can win a championship at a blue blood as we are describing it. And I think that Kyle Whittingham would be that. And so the thing that I am looking for then is coaching ability. I want somebody who I think with that talent could shape it into a national title winning team. And Kyle Whittingham has certainly proven himself as a football coach, as a roster builder, as a hirer, a hirer of coaching talent, an assessor of coaching talent. I think that as if we're just talking about building a program, if you give him unlimited resources, basically, if you give him the resources of a blue blood program, I would say a lot of the same things about him that I said about Leipold. I trust that he would find a way to get it done because I think he's a really good football coach.
Yeah, and also, like, for what it's worth, I didn't realize this till just now. Did you know that Utah signed the 20th ranked composite class in 2023?
That is punching above their weight class. That is not too shabby. Yeah. Yeah.
If I had read that before the podcast, I may have ranked him higher. But he is also on my list. I mean, yeah, look, Kyle Whittingham is one of the most known quantities in college football, right? Like, yeah. It is his teams have won so many different ways. He's had electric offenses. He's had lockdown defenses. With all the success he's had, he's never really quite had both in the same year, except for like 2008, I guess, was like the one year they had both. You have to go back a long time to find that. But they've had, what, 6 ranked finishes in the last 10 years at Utah, where they've missed a bowl game. The reason they didn't play in a bowl game was the 2020 season. They made a bowl game every time. They played in the conference title 5 times in the last 9 years and won 2 of them. He's a hell of a coach, right? He is a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
He deserves a ton of credit. And yeah, he's obviously a winner. I think you would feel very comfortable with Kyle Whittingham in game to be just about anybody with equivalent talent.
Yeah.
The question is just getting that equivalent talent, right? And also, like, he really holds on to his coaching staff for a long time. Those guys who he hires stay there forever, which was also true of like Pat Fitzgerald and Kirk Ferentz. And as these coaches get older, that doesn't always benefit you. He has not like brought in new ideas super often because the ideas he has worked, to be fair. But is that what it takes to win a title? Like, can you just have your guys, your mafia, win a title? I don't know. It hurt Jim Tressel in his latter run too.
You fucking jumped me. I was gonna say I'm hiring Jim Tressel. Basically, I'm hiring modern Jim Tressel. Essentially, you beat me to it. Yeah, that is what I. That was literally what I was envisioning with Whittingham. Is well, Tressel did it. I think he could do it. Very similar.
It's a fair stance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is your number 5?
I have Brian Kelly, who I know. Look, I get it. I really do. I know he's a dickhead. I know he really just his staff hiring fuck ups cost them from being a title contender this past season. They should have been way better. He's been a coach in the FBS for 21 years. He has a title appearance. He has another playoff appearance. He has 5 other New York Six appearances. He has done more at Notre Dame than, you know, any coach since Lou Holtz, basically in the modern era. He has won about 75% of his games despite spending a fair amount of that time at, you know, Central Michigan and Cincinnati and kind of digging Notre Dame out of a hole. He also won 2 national championships at Division II level at Grand Valley State. He's also an elite recruiter. He also tends to hire normally very good coaches for his staff. Like, there's a lot of coaches in Notre Dame during his run there who were constantly, you know, attempted to be poached by other teams. He just hired Blake Baker to LSU. Like, he's got some big names there. Denbrock got pulled back. He's a dickhead, and I don't think he could ever win 2 national titles in 5 years because everyone hates him.
Yeah.
And his staffs and his rosters fall apart a lot. But, you know, he's got, what is it? Let's see here. 5 top 10 finishes. And... 5 top 10 finishes and 9 top 12 finishes in his career as a coach. He's basically finished in the top 12 as often as he hasn't in his career as an FBS coach, which is nuts.
Yeah.
He has flaws. I know he has flaws, but in this era with a lot of young buck coaches who are still trying to prove themselves and are still learning things on the fly, right? We've seen even Kirby Smart early at Georgia made some basic mistakes that a more experienced coach wouldn't make. Ryan Day did the same thing at Ohio State. Lincoln Riley did it at Oklahoma. Still did a little bit at USC. Dan Lanning, I'm sure, is going to do the same thing very soon here. Like, a lot of these coaches who are early in their careers make mistakes because they don't have that level of experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that Brian Kelly in this era might get one just because he's the savvy vet out of this group.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh, right? I mean, that's the easiest example. Yeah, Jim exactly. Harbaugh just won a champ. Yeah. You only need one. to accomplish the goal here, you just need the one. And I think he is. I think he's capable of getting one. Jim Harbaugh could do it, and I don't think that Brian Kelly is a significantly worse coach than Jim Harbaugh. They're different guys, but that is the easiest comparison. Is that sometimes it just takes the right alignment of things. Sometimes it is. A guy who is consistently close, just getting that extra little bit and then getting the right runway to pay it off. Kelly was on my big board. He did not. He was ultimately the one of my 11 guys who I did not list, but he was right there. I can totally understand this one. My number six, I'm getting. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, my number six is Lance Leipold, so we can skip him.
Yeah.
He's already talked about him. Who's your six?
I'm getting speculative here. I'm going with John Sumrall. I'm going with John Sumrall.
I considered him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The experience is so small. He's had two seasons. They were two really, really damn good seasons. I am just betting on his ability to translate what he did in building a roster at Troy into any level. I have a ton of faith in John Sumrall. I think he's an extremely good recruiter, and that's something that will be displayed more as he continues to work his way up the coaching ranks. There's only so much that you can do at Troy realistically, and I think that his recruiting will improve significantly with the extra resources at Tulane and with the conference prestige that comes with being at Tulane. And I think if you put him in a blue blood, it would keep on going up. So he is somebody who I really don't like. A lot of my coaches on this board, I do have questions about their ability to recruit at this level. I really don't have that with John Sumrall. He was an ace recruiter in the SEC as an assistant. Like he has proven his ability to do this.
You know who else has shown their quality with more resources, by the way?
Who's that?
Home field apparel.
That's right. That's true. That is true. Do you want to do the home field read? I've been doing them recently. I'll let you have this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I love to just interrupt your train of thought to do this bit.
I'm pretty much done. I was just going to say basically the same thing over again, but reword it a little bit. So that's fine.
Yes. And we'd love to do that. That's the people always say writing more is writing better.
Yep.
Which is what we love to do. Mm-hmm. and both of us have that exact problem.
Yes.
No, home field apparel is it's the tits, right? It's the best.
Oh yeah.
They are expanding their gear by a lot. They've done some NASCAR stuff very recently. They're doing NFL stuff. They just launched some sick Indiana State and Michigan State gear.
Yeah.
To commemorate the 79 championship. They launched a great Lady Vols jacket today. I mean, that was yesterday. This week, they launched Lady Vols jacket. Mm-hmm. The gear they're putting out is at such a high level, like week over week, month over month. They are just churning stuff out like crazy. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I love seeing what they're doing. Whether you want jackets, shirts, sweatshirts, joggers, hats, anything you can imagine, Homefield is making it. They're working on their girdles, I've been told, but are not quite ready for production yet.
Uh-huh.
But Homefield apparel is, I'm getting a wedding garter design for myself, actually, from Home Field Apparel. So I'm excited about that. It's going to be a Buckeyes wedding garter that I'm going to wear. So that's big. And look, it's the best gear in the world. It's the best collegiate apparel in the world. If you want to get 15% off your first order, you can use the code Meet at Midfield for that. If you've already bought from them before, which you probably have, if you're listening to a premium Meet at Midfield podcast, you can tell them we sent you in the comments.
Yeah. What is the thing? I'm trying to make a reference here, but I can't remember what the word is. The thing that women used to wear in like the olden times, but goth women also still wear that like goes around.
Corsets.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. I'm wearing a Homefield corset right now. I've got a custom made one, and it's really comfortable. It's made out of the same material as the shirts, but it just holds so good. My waist is snatched. I have a snatched waist now because of Homefield, and you can too if you go on over to homefieldapparel.com.
What's some like Victorian or Middle Ages gear like to see Homefield make? I'd like to have a Homefield gambeson.
I'd like some pantaloons. Can we get some pantaloons with a big ass hoops around the legs? I think that would be pretty cool.
I would love to have some van braces for my various duels that I'm fighting in.
How about be nice for what me. About like overalls? How about home field overalls?
That can't be far away. We have to work on that. I know some of these Bo Diddley ass motherfuckers they sponsor would love them. I'd wear one.
Say they're making conjoined overalls for a certain college football podcast so they can hoot on jugs together.
They're making they're making Josh Pate like a cutoff tee.
Yeah,
I don't know if they sponsor him, but yeah,
he's got a dunce cap.
I have to get away
he's got
a home topic f- very quickly.
He's got, he's got a home field dunce cap that he's wearing.
Yeah, they're the best. They're the best. Buy some home field. On Summerall, I kept him off my list because of the Napier role.
Yeah.
I just want to see a little bit more. It's the same reason why I didn't include Jeff Traylor, mm-hmm. who I strongly considered. Traylor has, of course, a little more experience than Summerall, but look, I think he's an awesome coach. I think he's going to win a lot in the future, but I want to see more than 2 years at a higher level than what Summerall has done so far.
Yeah.
But he is a hell of a coach and I think has a very bright future.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if he's not at Tulane very long at all.
Yeah. You said your six is Leipold, right? So we can move on to seven.
Yeah. Seven. I have Chris Kleiman.
Me too. We both have Chris Kleiman at number seven. Nice. He's just the dedicated number seven guy. that's funny.
You want to go first then?
I think a lot of this here, you can kind of apply some of the stuff that I was saying earlier about Leipold or even about Whittingham. Like it's kind of the same mindset with this. He's done a really good job at Kansas State. That has been a good program for several years now here under him. He has hit another level after, I don't know if plateauing during the early stretch of his tenure would be the right word, because they obviously didn't. They continued to improve, but I like where they are right now, and I like his ability to build a program. I think he's a really good in-game coach, which is another thing that I like for this list. Recruiting, again, is a question. It's going to be a question, but he has experience at a blue blood. He has experience at kind of the blue blood of the FCS in North Dakota State, and he was extremely successful there. He didn't build the program, but he ran it extremely effectively. I think if you gave him those kind of resources at the FBS level, there would be nothing really stopping him from, challenging for that again. I think that he is that level of coach, and I love that he has that experience at the FCS level. I think he probably could be a little bit higher on my list, but seven was just where he ended up falling. But I feel pretty good about Chris Kleiman.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, he also had a pretty good recruiting class in 2023. They signed the 33rd overall recruiting class. A lot of that is because of signing top 100 overall quarterback with Avery Johnson, who is now obviously their quarterback of the future with Will Halbert leaving. I think every other class he signed the last 6 or 7 years, though, was outside the top 50. I agree that I don't worry too much about recruiting, but there's a level of it. Like, I'd like to see a baseline, right? And I just worry he doesn't quite even hit my baseline. And also North Dakota State, like, yeah, 4 national titles in 5 years is nuts. But it also kind of recruits itself to a certain level. And I mean, it wasn't like they lacked success before he got there, right? Like, yeah, when Craig Bohl was there before him, they won 3 straight national championships going into his 2 straight, followed by a loss in the semifinal, followed by 2 more. And then Matt Entz won 2 more in 3 years after Kleiman left. So there's a level where I'm like, you know, yeah, I think he's a great ball coach. And I think what he's done at Kansas State is really impressive. They have back-to-back ranked finishes coming to this year, including an appearance in the Sugar Bowl and a conference championship in 2022. I have him on my list too, for the same reason. I guess I just couldn't put him higher because I'm like, does he have the recruiting baseline? What is he, you know, how much of his success is his and kind of what can he grow it into going forward? So I'm very excited to see this year at Kansas State because they're coming to the season as one of, if not the Big 12 favorites.
Yeah.
And with that change, kind of the conference landscape in the Big 12, this will be a real prove it year for Kleiman for me.
Yeah. Who is your number 8 then?
Kyle Whittingham. We already talked about him.
Okay.
Who's yours?
I've got Dan Lanning here. This is mostly a recruiting pick.
Damn, dude.
I'm going to be honest. I don't love Dan Lanning's in-game coaching all that much. I do like that he is willing to take some risks. I think that is better than the alternative of not being willing to take any risks. I think maybe he is maybe not doing it for exactly the right reasons. Sometimes I think he's maybe just hunting for, wow, look at this crazy call that paid off for Dan Lanning, whereas he's, you know, I would maybe rather him put a little bit more thought into it than that. Like, some of the times it seems like he's just doing it to do it, like going for it on fourth and six on his own 30 or something like that. I don't really need you to do that. I don't know what you're trying to prove doing that, but he's a very, very good recruiter, and I think if you surround him with enough good coaches, which Oregon's not that far from. They weren't that far from the playoff this past year. I think he could probably maybe do it. Once you get to this part of the list, it's kind of hoping for the best. I don't have a ton of guys that I was considering at eight who I feel great about, but I think that Dan Lanning, at least as a recruiter, can bring in an extreme, like, I think he could bring in a top, I don't know if he's done this at Oregon, but I think he could bring in a top five class pretty consistently if you put him at, like, a, you know, whatever generic blue blood that we're talking about here. And that will at least get you in the conversation, if nothing else. I mean, fucking Ed Orgeron won a championship, and I think Dan Lanning is at least as competent an in-game coach as Ed Orgeron is.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, I consider not ranking him because it just pissed me off how he's talked about.
Yeah.
Like, he's already been anointed as the next one because he, like, gave that tough-ass pregame interview before playing Colorado, which obviously, you know, never had the lines of scrimmage to compete. He's also 2-5 against ranked teams in 2 years at Oregon. Not, like, top five teams, not top ten teams, ranked teams. He obviously got his shit pushed in by Georgia in his first ever game as an FBS head coach, and then lost twice to Washington this past year when they were favored both times. That sticks out to me a little bit. I do think about that. But yeah, he signed the number 3 overall recruiting class in the 2024 class. He signed the number 9 recruiting class in 2023. He is recruiting at a crazy level. And even in a very short period, the 2022 class, he bought in a couple big guys, and they finished the 13th ranked class after having quite a few decommits, because of the coach change. But he is, I mean, an elite recruiter, right? I think we can say that safely. It helps to have Phil Knight's money backing you,
yeah,
and all the money kind of floating around those Oregon companies backing you. And he obviously already has back-to-back ranked finishes and a top 10 finish. I'm not saying what he's done is not impressive, right? It is. But let's see you beat a couple big boys first, right? Someone besides like 21st ranked UCLA in 2022. Beat someone better for me to feel impressed.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is what I would say, which is why he's lower. I mean, he's 9th on my list. I have him net right after you do.
Okay.
He made mine too. Because I've seen him have, like, I think his staff hiring is generally very good. I think he builds really good coaching staffs, and the recruiting thing is elite. He's also put some pretty good products in the field with the makeup of teams that should be good. But yeah, his in-game coaching, he's fucked it now, like, more than a couple times.
Yeah.
And I guess I want to see him prove that he's not like Ryan Day as a coach has some of that bully syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Like a mid-level ranked team that's not actually elite, he loves to beat the shit out of them. They sum up his ranked win numbers.
Yeah.
When it's another team can go toe-to-toe with like real NFL talent, he folds all the time, right? And so far, Dan Lanning's folded. I'm not saying he always will, and I don't necessarily think he's Ryan Day in that mindset or like have that like bug he can't get past, but I don't know. I'm curious to watch it develop. He's going to be in the Big Ten now. He has a huge game against Ohio State in the 5th or 6th week of the season. That's big for both of these coaches. I can't wait to watch that one.
Yeah. I would like to see, I think the best way I could put it is I would just like to see a little bit more purpose to his in-game coaching. It doesn't really feel like he knows what he's doing. He's just kind of flying blind and randomly pressing buttons hoping that they will work, and when you're more talented obviously you can get away with that, but it leaves something to be desired in those biggest games where he's making decisions that it doesn't really even feel like he believes in. You're not sure exactly why he is doing what he's doing. He's just kind of doing it, hoping for the best. And I'm hoping that with time, as he continues to grow into the role, he will move past that. He's still young. This is going to be his third season as a head coach. Like, it's totally possible that he will, and I think he probably will. Eventually, you have those things kind of beaten out of you when you lose enough, and so I'm sort of banking on that. But it's certainly not. I don't feel like amazing about him, which is why he's 8th on my board and 9th on yours. My number 9, I have a guy you mentioned earlier who did, I don't think, made your list. You said, but I've got Jeff Traylor. I could say pretty much the same things for Jeff Traylor that I said about John Sumrall. I think he's an amazing recruiter, and if you put him at a blue blood, he would recruit extremely well. In this instance, I would want my generic blue blood to be in the state of Texas, but again, we said that doesn't matter at the start of the show, and so it doesn't matter.
Or a surrounding state.
But he's an extremely, extremely, I think probably one of the best recruiters of the state of Texas in college football right now, and that is a good state to be one of the best recruiters of. I think he's just a really good program builder. I think he has an understanding.
Hires great coaches.
Yeah, he hires really, really, really good coaches. His staffs have been consistently excellent there. And something that I really like about what he has done is he understands the importance of having a program identity when you are building a program. He is not just assembling collections of guys with no real coherent vision in mind. Jeff Traylor's version of UTSA, what he thought he could do there, is what we have seen these last 2 or 3 or 4 years, whatever it's been, where they've been dominant. There is a coherent vision for what he wants it to be, and I think he could apply that vision at a higher level and have a ton of success. I don't really honestly know why I have him this low. I feel pretty good about him. I think he could do it. I think that Jeff has that level of coaching ability and that level of vision that is required for winning championships, basically for winning national championships.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I like Jeff a lot, as you know, obviously. I'm just kind of in the same boat where I want to I want to see a little bit more, right? I want to see a little bit more from him. I don't know. He's fantastic. I just want to see it for a little bit longer than I have so far, and also at a higher level, which I know he can't really prove yet. He should have gotten some of those jobs and didn't.
Yeah.
But I strongly considered him as well. I mean, he was very close to my cut line.
Yeah.
Just kind of under the same boat for me as a John Sumrall or even a Jamie Chadwell, who I thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of put him in the same category as those guys who are great coaches. I feel very strongly about Willie Fritz also on that list. It's too soon for me against having not played a lot of great competition yet.
Yeah.
And I know it's true that you can only play who you play and you work in the same context as the opponents you play in your conference. But
yeah,
he also did a lot to build up UTSA from a pretty moribund program. But yeah, I considered him very strong, but he did not make my cut. My 10th coach,
mm-hmm.
Is one I do not feel great about. I have Sark here.
Okay.
On the grounds of his recruiting, mm-hmm. which is nuts, right? And also on the grounds that after like barely winning more than half his games for his first 8 years at major programs, he broke through, right? He made the college football playoff. They had a very real chance in the final seconds to beat Washington and to go play for a national championship. I think they probably matched up better against Michigan, but that's neither here nor there. I don't really trust he would have won that one either for the same problems he always has in big games. But he recruits his fucking nuts off. I think his coaching staff hires have also been very good lately. He signed, what is it here, 2 top 5 classes and a number 6 overall class in his 3 full recruiting classes at Texas. They're going to have a top 5 class again this year. He has been able to get the Texas booster operation aligned for the first time in, I don't know, since Mac Brown's the peak of his powers, right? It's been a long time. That does mean something to me when you're looking at hiring a guy for a blue blood program. That's fucking hard to say, dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost a lot of big games. He did not maximize Washington or USC. He had his off-field problems. This is maybe crazy to say also. I almost view his career in two parts, like the pre and post alcoholism, which I don't know if that's fair or if that's even like too wild to say.
Let's see. I think that's probably fair. I think you could. I think that he would maybe consider this. I would guess he would frame it that way. I think that's probably a pretty distinct change in his, you know, life and the person that he is. I would say that.
Yeah, and in the way he's like climbing back up after that, I think is pretty impressive. And I think you could point towards that as evidence that he's learned a lot from the Saban rehabilitation school, from his past parts of his career, from this year at Texas. They have a real chance they could run again this year. They have a lot of talent on that team. They're replacing some pieces, particularly in the skill core. But Quinn Ewers is back. I think their line play should be strong again on both sides of the football. Like, this is a team that has a chance to be really good again this year. All of a sudden, if he has two top five finishes or even like two top six finishes in a row, I think about Sark as a coach very differently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He still wants to lose big games so badly. You see it all the time with him. He's trying to do it.
Yeah.
He did it twice this year. But for the 10th spot on my list, just with the recruiting expertise and like the experience he has, I was willing to take a shot at him.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. Ryan, we've been doing this podcast together, I think, for 3 years. We've known each other for longer than that. I think you know who my number 10 pick is. I think that you are well aware of who my number 10 pick is. And if you guess it correctly, I'm going to cut the show right there because I don't think I need to explain it. I'm going to let you guess who my number 10 is. And if you get it right, that's going to be the end of the show.
You have to have picked Luke Fickell.
No, I didn't go with Luke Fickell. Man. My God.
Well, you said him earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My God. No, Jamie Chadwell. Of course, Jamie Chadwell is my number 10.
That was my other guess. Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah, Jamie Chadwell.
I forgot which one you said you didn't pick.
My God, we're going to have to go to marriage counseling, you and me. We got some.
We are fucking up the newlyweds game.
Yeah, we've got some fucking couples therapy to go through. No, Jamie Chadwell, I don't really know that I have to. Like, I'm not going to explain it. I think if you put an option coach at a blue blood, he would win a national championship. I don't care who it is. I think it would happen. I think that he would usher in a glorious second era of the 1970s and he would fix college football. Spiritually, he's number one on my list. Logically, he's number 10, but he is there. I think it would work. It has worked before. I'm not crazy to say this. Like 80% of college football's history has belonged to option coaches. It is not that hard to think that it could happen again. The sport is cyclical, and I think that Jamie Chadwell will be the man to usher in a glorious new era of option football. He is the number 10 guy on my board. If you actually put me in charge of a blue blood that wasn't like a generic blue blood, like if you for some reason something went terribly wrong and I was named the athletic director at Ohio State or Georgia or Alabama or wherever, I would hire Jamie Chadwell and then I would resign. That's it. I'm done. Okay. I've done my work. I'm leaving. I would hire Jamie Chadwell and I would let him cook. He's my number 10. I have faith in him. I have even more faith in the triple option as a concept. I think it would win a national championship. That's where I'm at with this.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, in his last 4 years at Coastal and Liberty, he has two ranked finishes and two conference championships.
Yeah.
He made a New Year's Six Bowl at Liberty. Neither of those schools were anything 5 years ago, right? Obviously, he takes over Liberty in different context than he did Coastal.
Yeah.
Liberty come in from Hugh Freeze's hands before his. In his last 10 years as a head coach, four of them were spent at the FCS level. He has six seasons of 9-plus wins, five of 10-plus wins.
Yeah.
The guy wins fucking football games, right? He does it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was very good, at North Greenville, even at the D2 level. He worked his way up to the FCS, then worked his way up to the FBS. Then he keeps kind of climbing these ranks slowly, despite having a pretty apparently off-putting and redneckish personality.
Yeah.
That's
how it gets you.
He's
tricking people. Yeah. He makes you think that he's some dumb hick, and then he gets in there, and the motherfucker keeps winning football games. He doesn't, some point, I would like for everybody nationally and for a lot of these jobs to understand, like, it seems like that's just who he is at this point. He puts on this character of this dumb hick. He is not actually a dumb hick. Like, he is a hillbilly, but he's not fucking stupid. He knows what he's doing. He's very good at recruiting. Yeah. He's also
47 years old and has 14 years of head coaching experience.
God damn, why won't somebody hire this guy? It doesn't make any sense. It's so stupid. Just pure, based on like his personality, schools refusing to hire this guy. Oh no, what if we had a hillbilly coaching our college football team? Come on. We've got too many New York liberals in this sport, Ryan. We've got too many East Coast dum-dums who don't know the history of the sport. Hicks always win. This is a hillbilly sport. Bring him back.
The good news is whenever Arkansas fires Sam Pittman this year, we're going to get to be aggrieved on one side or the other, whether they don't hire Traylor or they don't hire Chadwell. Yeah. Either way, we get to complain,
yeah,
which is huge for us.
God, that'll be so that'll be so fun. That is that's enrichment for us to be able to do that, to get mad about
when the school doesn't do that. Yeah. I'd really love to see him. I think like a really funny outcome would be him getting North Carolina after Mac Brown retires. Just to watch him interact with the, all the alums of that school.
Yeah.
Are again like New York liberal, basically, like people from the East Coast who migrated down there. And by the way, we're Midwestern socialists. We're allowed to say that.
I live in Idaho, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh too, but we spent enough time. It counts.
Yeah. Idaho is the Midwest. I'm ready to say it. It's culturally, it's pretty much the same thing. It's not that different.
I want to see him go to a school with fans that absolutely hate it. Or sorry, but they're alums that hate him.
Yes.
But like t-shirt fans that think he fucking rocks.
Yes.
And
yeah.
He's like Jeff Gordon in a football coach's uniform.
Yes. That was what I was going to say. He would be the football coaching equivalent of like the movie on Rotten Tomatoes that has like terrible critical ratings. And then the fan rating is 100%. Just the rank and file absolutely fucking love this guy. And then all of the boosters are just, they're so sick of dealing with him, but there's nothing they can do about it because he keeps on winning and the fans love him.
Yeah.
That would be,
by the way, pro tip, next movie that's going to be true for, check out Spaceman on Netflix, which stars Adam Sandler as a Czech astronaut who is possibly hallucinating but talking with a intelligent and telepathic alien spider voiced by Paul Dano that is also benevolent. Check that one out. I'll just say that. Check that one out if you're looking for a fan favorite the critics will hate and say it's like lowbrow or thinks it's smarter than it is. It's also directed by the guy who did Chernobyl for HBO.
Oh my god. Sandler's in
putting
his
you
bag.
On to some game here.
Sandler is in his bag. He's back, baby. It's so good to see him cooking again.
They even let him dress like Adam Sandler in space in a couple of the scenes.
Oh my god.
He's wearing the big baggy shorts around.
They especially crafted astronaut outfit, the spaceman outfit, where he's got the giant fucking baggy shorts and like an and one t-shirt.
My buddy saw him playing pickup hoops in New York the other week.
Yeah, that's an intimidating thing to see. Imagine you're just walking down the street and you see it at an outdoor court. You just see Adam Sandler playing basketball. I don't know really what I would. I don't really know how I would react to that. I don't think that I'm equipped.
I think he would respect us.
Yeah, I'd like to see it, but I think it would be a little bit. I think it'd be a little bit jarring. It's like seeing your teacher at the grocery store when you're in school, right? You're just like, wait a second. I didn't think you came here. Wait, what's going on? I knew you do. Like logically, I know Adam Sandler plays outdoor summer hoops, but you never think you're going to see it until you come across it. That's a crazy experience. That's a crazy thing to see.
I think if we did a movie about flipping the field, Sandler would play you.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. That's sure. I'm a little bit
played by Paul Walter Hauser.
Yeah, you'd be played by Paul Dano. It's the same, same cast. Okay. The stumbling block that I'm dealing with here is the movie about flipping the field. I don't know exactly what would have to happen in our lives in the next couple years for that to be the case. That would. I don't know that it would be good necessarily.
if things go, I'll tell you this, if things go a certain way on the last Saturday of November, I might be appearing in the news.
they could be making kind of a movie about you, maybe more of a documentary style film. I will be in it.
It's like
I'll
an I, Tonya style movie.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. Well, we'll leave you with that. Jamie Chadwell will win a national championship, and Ryan will be featured soon in an I, Tonya-style movie. Everybody has that to look forward to. Do we have anything else here?
No, this was fun. Yeah. We do this twice a year, like the ideas like this, because they're fun for us.
Yeah.
And shut the fuck up. It's our podcast. If you don't like it, too bad.
Yeah, Josh Pate has a dunce hat for you. Next week we'll be doing another hypothetical. What if your athletic director was black or Chinese?